I think the number one thing that you could learn if you're going to create technical understanding is like learn about like a relational database and objects and data models. Like your understanding of software and technology will just like instantly 10x once you understand sort of, oh, like there's tables and those tables have rows and those are records and like those can link to each other. And now the whole world just like starts to make a lot more sense as soon as you sort of understand that piece.
Welcome to Centricity, the go-to podcast for B2B executives designed to equip you with deep insights into your buyer's needs so you can consistently deliver exceptional value and generate transformational results with greater efficiency. In today's episode, our host, Will Riley, meets with Connor Jeffers to talk about building digital systems that work for you. If this is your first time listening, we're so glad you're here, and we hope you enjoy the episode. If you're a regular listener, back for more valuable insights, we encourage you to leave us a rating and review. Now, let's dive in.
Yeah, man, I think if you want to maybe start with a little quick intro of yourself, and we've obviously got your guest bio that we'll include on the episode recap, as well as the webpage, but love if you could introduce yourself to our listeners today.
Totally. I'm Connor. I run two businesses, both in the HubSpot ecosystem. The first one is Aptitude8, which is a technical consulting firm. So A8 helps companies implement, integrate, optimize, and extend their HubSpot platform. So we'll talk a little bit about what that means as compared to Fitzmartin or other folks like Fitzmartin. And then I also run a company called Happily, which is a HubSpot Ventures portfolio company, and Happily builds apps for HubSpot. So we have a handful of applications. We're building more all the time. And we have apps that sort of help HubSpot and RevOps admins build functionality, solve for problems that they otherwise couldn't onto the HubSpot platform. And we have an event solution. We have a commerce solution. We have some like cloning and VLOOKUP and RevOpsy admin type tools as well. And we spun that business out of Aptitude8, I guess like a year ago at this point, which is pretty wild to say. But yeah. So I do that stuff. I'm very HubSpotty is kind of like my orange DNA.
I love it. No, thanks for that, bud. Yeah. And we're excited to have you, Connor. You know, we've been around for over three decades, and we've been early adopter to marketing automation and absolutely have used HubSpot. We're very HubSpotty as well. We've been a partner of HubSpot's for at least a decade, if not more. And it's been exciting to see companies like yourself, I think, grow and to support the HubSpot ecosystem. So we like to have guests on, you know, directly from HubSpot. We've interviewed different stakeholders that are employees of HubSpot. But what I love is that this is agency to agency. And I think HubSpot a few years ago, HubSpot probably made it okay to where if you're a HubSpot partner, you could work with another HubSpot partner. Because sometimes whenever you're pitching services, right, it feels like we might be in competition with each other. And I think HubSpot has done a great job the last several years at expanding their product to where there's more agency to agency collaboration. I don't know if you've seen that in terms of how HubSpot's evolved, but we have definitely experienced that firsthand.
Yeah. I mean, I think we see some of it for sure. I think it's sort of the shift of HubSpot, the product, to HubSpot, the platform. And so now that they're sort of more in that universe, there's a lot of folks that are like, we deliver services to HubSpot customers for this sort of niche. And there's a lot of people that you can sort of like, to HubSpot customers, we do these things, as opposed to we're all selling marketing services and HubSpot's just like a tool that is supporting that. And so I think that shift has led to a lot more diversity amongst the types of partner that people are.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, for us, I'd say the biggest thing that we've encountered, which I'm really excited to leverage some of your expertise, is around just integrations. I think,
yeah,
you know, for us, when we look at tech stack development, you know, we've actually included it as part of our go-to-market strategy for clients is, do you have the appropriate ad tech, MarTech, sales tech, and foundational tech to facilitate growth? So when you mentioned strategy and a growth perspective, we absolutely always will get into conversations around the CRM, how pipelines are structured. Is my ad delivery model, you know, does it make sense to where my buyer lives and things like that? But as a whole, for us, as we've looked at kind of getting more immersed into the business part of it. So more on the operational side, we've had to actually vet out a lot of custom integrations and determine, you know, do I do a custom? Do I just only look for a native? Do I need this app, happily add on and things like that? So, I mean, I think that there's, you know, just some, not necessarily confusion, but there, our clients and prospects rely on our expertise to let them know, like, when do I do a custom integration, or when do I use an integration at all? Do I just get an add-on of my existing system? So I'd love it. I don't know if you, how you want to answer that, but be curious just sure, your thoughts just, on kind of the market.
Work on it for sure. Yeah. I think the thing that I like, I'm jumping right into like, here's how I do it, but I can comment on the actual thing first. I think when you're looking at this, right, the difference between do I just do a native thing or do I need a custom thing is probably a function of like how core to my business operations and how core to my business process is this, or is this connection, right? And like, if you're just like, oh, it'd be nice to have some of this data in HubSpot, or it'd be nice if we could send this somewhere else, and we're looking to just optimize kind of how we're doing something now, I think anything native, anything standard is probably going to be more geared to that, because most integrations are relatively shallow and they're solving for what is the most prolific, common, easy to solve for use case. And when you think about like, why do most companies build integrations? It's not to actually solve the problem of the user. Like, that's not why they build the integration. They build the integrations so that they can say integrates with HubSpot on their features page. Like, that's why they build it. And so I think that like, as a result, if you're in that camp, they'll have some functionality that's like of use to you. But if you really want to go deep and you really want to sort of like integrate this, and I think the way that we usually think about it is very business process centric of what is the problem you're trying to solve? How do these systems need to communicate with each other? What is the end result? And is it possible that a native integration can support this? And if not, what are our options? And like building something full blown and custom is an option. So is just doing a coded action and like sync it, goes straight to something's API and just doing a post request. Like, I think a lot of people start with like, I need an, like, I think a really good anecdote for that, right? Is like, we build a lot of ERP integrations and a lot of people come to us and say, I need an integration with NetSuite. And we're like, what does it need to do? And they're like, well, it needs to be bi-directional, real-time sync. We just sync all of the companies and you sync all of the contacts. I want all my orders in HubSpot. I need to do all these things. And if you go down that path, you'll give them like a quote and a proposal and a level of complexity that's really, really high. And I think it's really important to sort of stop and be like, what is the problem you're actually trying to solve here? And what do you want to do? And 9 times out of 10, they're like, when we win a deal in HubSpot, I want to have that exist in NetSuite. And then we're like, cool. Do you guys use orders? Do you use invoices? Do you use what does actually that look like? And then they show you in NetSuite and you're like, oh, cool. We'll use a coded action. I'll create a customer record, I'll create an order record, and I'll like assign it to your finance team, and I'll give them a link to HubSpot like in the description. And they're like, oh my God, that's exactly what we need. And I think that like integration is something that people use that word, and it is a substitute for what is the desired end workflow. And I think that end workflow requires data from multiple systems, and therefore I need them to have a really strong integration. And so I think that by starting sort of from that perspective, you can kind of get a better handle on it.
Yeah. When you followed your process, have you noticed where maybe someone abandoned the original tech that they were either trying to integrate to or integrate from? Is there, you know, have you lost HubSpot work because of that process? Or
yeah,
has
totally,
it usually, 100%. Yeah, have you?
I've like, we've had people come to us with a big budget to do all of these crazy things. And we're like, we can build you that. And I don't think you're going to be happy at all. Like, I don't think it's going to solve your problem. And I think what you actually want is like I just had this conversation with somebody and they were like, we're trying to build, and they were trying to like get all of their finance data built out in HubSpot because they were on QuickBooks, and they were like, QuickBooks isn't sufficient enough. And like, we want to build this all, and we want custom object records, and we need workflows, and we need like time series financial data. And I was like, bro, I think you want NetSuite. I don't think this is what you want me to do at all. And I think we see that, like, I think the two big culprits I run into are people that want their CRM platform to be an ERP and they should just go get an ERP, and people who want their CRM platform to be like a project management system and they should just go get a project management system. And I think trying to force something to be the solution that you want, I almost always start from, do you want to build something that is custom and unique to your business and the way that you do things? Or is this a problem that a lot of businesses might have that aren't you? And if it's the latter, there's probably something out there that does that well. And you may not need to custom build it at all. And if you do need to custom build something, how can you do it on a platform so that your customization is as light as possible and you're sort of leveraging standard platform functionality as much as possible?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and we would say our really behavioral science framework is kind of relating to that story is the difference of late stage and early stage in terms of, am I pre-writing this solution without knowing what the true benefits are or maybe the risks that are involved? So, because to your point, I need an integration. We can't assume that they know even what
they don't know what that means.
they don't know what that means.
I think you always have to start. And I think that this is your duty as a service provider, but I think as an ops person, and if you're just like an internal business person, like try to never tell people like, this is the solution that I want. I'd always sort of start with like, this is the problem that I have. And if this problem didn't exist, this is the kind of world I want to live in. And if you have enough expertise to articulate the solution and you know the solution that you want to do, you shouldn't work with a service provider or consultant. You should just go hire developers, go hire task monkeys to go do the things that you want them to do, because you can just tell them what to do. And if you're like, yeah, but I don't think I can tell them what I want to do. Amazing. Tell people what your problem is and work with them to figure out that solution. And you're going to get to a much better place.
I love that. On the custom route, we'll kind of go back on that. What's been your favorite integration that you've done, or maybe the data set that came in and solved the problem? Is there, and you can redact other systems if you need or customers.
We have so much crazy stuff. That's so hard to pick.
You mentioned, you know, orders and kind of getting that in. Like what was one you're like, man, that was like, we're proud of that solution.
This is going to be a really annoying answer. I will tell you something, but like this is all that we really do, right? I think that like 90%, 95% of the work that we do is multi-hub, multi-platform, integrated, complex stuff. But stuff that's really cool. We have a solution that we built. HubSpot has a new CRM card beta. So it lets you actually like build an entire React application inside of HubSpot. So the reason that that's really cool is that previously when you had a CRM card, you had to basically build that as an application. You had to host that somewhere and outside of HubSpot. And then HubSpot would like query that other application and show it inside of HubSpot. And the new React CRM card functionality lets you build those applications and fully host them in HubSpot. So they don't exist anywhere else. You don't have to like figure any of that out. You can just deploy it to someone's HubSpot portal and it runs. And so we have a solution that's super cool, which allows for sales reps at a financial services company to get real-time quotes on commodities pricing from HubSpot, and to open a card in HubSpot, go and search for ticker symbols and like add all this stuff up, and then add it all onto a quote, grab that pricing, move it in direct from like a live moving number on a commodities exchange, and like insert that into a HubSpot quote and send it out for signature. And the way that they were doing that previously was like, let me go search, let me type it in, let me query it from our system, let me copy paste a bunch of numbers, and it's like, it's super, super sophisticated. But the end user is just like, oh, HubSpot has like this cool stock ticker integration. And the sales reps like have no idea. And for them, it's just all feels very, very native, which I think is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you're keeping them logged into the system. You know, they're not having to go somewhere else to find that information, but it sounds like. I love that. Was that a use case too, where you kind of the difference probably in your industry is I provided a solution versus really understanding the problem? Was that one where you'd say, we knew exactly, yes, how to solve it, and we actually knew the business problem? Like, what was at stake if we didn't solve it?
I mean, so typically when we're working with a customer, right, like we use the term product owner a lot in our organization. And so we usually think like we have a customer, that customer is a product owner. They're telling us like, I want to be able to make it easy for my team to build these things, and the data that they need in order to put these things together lives over in this other tool in this other place. And here's what I think an ideal solution would look like. And we're then putting that together. And honestly, in that example, they didn't come to us and say, I need a real-time integration with like a commodities trading platform. But they easily could have. Like they easily could have been where they started, is like, we need to build this whole custom crazy thing. And I think one of the things that you find when you build stuff generally is that the people describing the things that they want to build are using language that maybe is hyper-specific and means something specific, but to them, it's just the best possible term they could come up with. A totally out of left field example. Happily has an app called Zebra. Zebra is a super cool integration between HubSpot and Stripe. We basically bring in all of your Stripe data model. We build transactions and subscriptions as custom objects in HubSpot. And then you can manage all of those straight from HubSpot. It's really popular with B2B SaaS, PLG companies, people sort of doing this like subscription, free trial, sales assisted type of flow. And we had a prospect and we recently added some dedicated sales headcount. And before that, we just had product specialists. And we had a prospect who was like, I need tiered pricing or I need consumption-based pricing. And to the product specialist who knows our product and knows Stripe, they're like, oh, tiered pricing is a Stripe feature. We don't support tiered pricing right now. We can't help you. Sorry. And then we add like a sales rep and they're like, whoa, wait. What are you guys trying to do? And then we find out they're not using tiered pricing in Stripe, which is a very specific thing with an actual API endpoint and actually means something at all. They're just like, yeah, we have multiple plans and the plans are based off of these tiers. And we're like, no, we can absolutely do that for you. Like, that's fine. And I think that you shouldn't give too much credit to the uneducated buyer. And if you're doing consultative selling, you have to ensure that you're really understanding what is the pain and what's the desired end result and not what do you want? Because I think when you just give people exactly what they say that they want, they're often unhappy. And it's because they can't actually tell you what they want.
Whether you use a CRM, marketing automation, advertising platforms, or anything else, keeping track of your current marketing technology can be challenging. And if you need assistance sorting through your existing tech stack, FitzMartin's MarTech Audit is here to help. FitzMartin will audit your organization's currently utilized technology based on 7 categories, analyzing how your organization's tech components are used to see if you are allocating the proper funding to each criterion. The result? It delivers robust ROI savings through reduced tech fees, recommendations for future technology, and more time for your marketers to do their jobs. For more information, check out our show notes or visit FitzMartin.com.
Just from a business standpoint, is integrations, data set, you know, obviously third-party apps or apps that you build or that are, you know, add-on that change. What's the standard business model now for companies like either Happily or A8? Is it design and build, and that's where you make your margin, or you know, it makes actually a longer term sense for the client to have a managed services agreement? Just a
great question.
People are always exploring, you know, yeah, what should someone expect if they're going down this path?
Yeah. So this is a big reason why A8 and Happily are like completely separate businesses and completely disconnected and like don't have the same team or the same operating model. And the reason is like their business models are completely different, to your point, right? So with something like Happily, we're building an app and a product and you're paying a subscription fee for that product. And that subscription fee represents some percentage of a percent of the cost to build that solution because you're using standard functionality. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about like an out-of-the-box integration versus like a custom integration, right? Like Happily builds effectively apps that are akin to any standard integration. Like we have features, we have users, they want to build stuff, we're building functionality. If it doesn't do the thing that you want it to do, like, sorry, it won't work for you. The flip side for A8 is A8 is doing technical consulting. And so what we're charging people for is helping them figure out what to build. It's like a big part of it, right? It's not just building the thing. It's actually, what should we build? How should it work? How should our business process change? How does this fit into our business process? How do we make this actually function? And then the flip side of that is building the thing. And then our end goal is to build something and then hand it off to a customer and be able to have them maintain it and manage it long term. Like, I'm a big advocate of, if you can't maintain and manage something that you have built or something that has been built for your organization, you are going to have a really bad time eventually. And it may not be today, but like at some point you're going to cross a bridge where you need to change it. You need to edit it. Like if your business is completely stagnant and it never changes, you have a whole bunch of other problems. But as you're evolving and as you're adapting and as you're changing, you need to be able to iterate and evolve the systems and the platforms and the technology that keeps you together. And so if you're doing that, we really like customers to be able to maintain it long term and either educate them and really build something that is maintainable without going into the code itself, or be able to hand it off to someone internally at their organization. And if you're not in a position to be able to do that, like I would question in making an investment in something completely custom because it might work really well for you for some period of time and then something's going to change.
Right. I mean, either from the data going in and out or expectations right. or the reporting functionality that you need. And I think that's so important, you know, guiding the client and the customer in their unique journey of understanding their problem. Because they've come to you with, hey, you are the solution expert. You've pre-built this, it's off the shelf, it's custom, whatever the different options are. And yeah, there's a reason why there's not a brick and mortar storefront for A8 and Fitzmartin and other agencies like us. Like we have to spend the consulting time to truly articulate how we can help. Because I think if we just take orders, then our agencies wouldn't be where we're at today. You know, yeah. And we're worth more than just order takers. I think you mentioned hiring some of those task function type people, and you don't want your agency to just take orders. You want your agency to lead. So you mentioned technical consulting. I mean, I hear that as a brand positioning statement for you guys, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, yes, we make margin and money on it, but it's like that's what we want to be doing. You know, we want to be providing recommendations that are solving problems. So I think that there's a lot of agencies out there that would hopefully maybe hear this and maybe rethink their proposals that are out.
I think that like one of the things people fall into, right? Like I see it happen. I think this is the normal cycle, right? I think that somebody starts and they're, oh, I'm doing order taking. This is great. I'm like, I'm going to maybe get some other people and we're all doing order taking. And then they're like, oh man, order taking is really hard and people are mad and we're not giving them what they need. I should figure out how we can not do that. And then they kind of adapt and change and figure out how to do that. And then they build this army of order takers below them. And eventually they outscale their ability to, and I think that this happens at like the 10 to 12, 13, 14 people sort of mark. And it's like, oh no, I can't set strategy and direction for all of these people, all my clients. And I only have a bunch of order takers because that's what I like built this thing out of. And then I think what often happens is people shift to, okay, let's just be this outsourced services provider and we'll do either templatized or kind of the same consistent service type. And like, that's how we'll go and scale and that's how we'll do it. Or you kind of have to go the other direction and say, wow, we have to stop being order takers and we have to like completely shift and change the way that we're doing this. And I think that there's also sort of a sweet spot that some people can stay in for a long time. And I think you see a lot of, there are a lot of good, interesting boutique-y marketing agencies at the lower end of the size range where you have one, maybe two really competent, capable people and a lot of execution folks. And that works, but it also has sort of built-in scale limitations that I think you start to run into.
Yeah, I think it's like you've done this before. Yeah. And I'm sure you've seen that. Yeah. I mean, because I think we're more on strategy and growth side of it. I think we've seen a lot of our competitors locally and even, you know, regionally kind of fall in that trap of like just getting stuck, kind of hitting a ceiling, you know, and not being able to grow past that threshold. And I think a lot of what you're describing is what they're not doing, right? It's like, well, the top who started it, whose name's on the door, you know, they're it, and they've not necessarily scaled down to the point where the people are taking that vision and then applying it. They've just hired really good executors, and clients catch on to that after a while. You know,
totally.
Hey, I noticed Connor stopped going to the meetings. Is there a reason why? And
yeah,
you know, and if you're not there, you've got to like, have you scaled Connor? You know,
yeah, exactly. And like, I think that one of the things that becomes really hard is like, not only can you not scale the individual, but I think, I don't know, it takes this weird combination of, it's like ego and humility at the same time. You have to be like, oh, wait, maybe I am creating some secret sauce here. And also like, I can't scale that secret sauce forever. And you kind of have to have both of those thoughts like simultaneously in your head to be like, oh, I need to do something different. Like this has to change. And I think that that's like a big moment in the growth of any kind of like business service provider for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a couple, man, we could talk for like hours here, but just a couple more questions. And we've just been super organic, but there's one in particular that the team is curious about, which is, I think there's sometimes a lack of understanding of the, would you identify as an integrator? Would you ever use that word for yourself? Or
yeah, I mean, I think so there's a term in the old, and I'm sure it doesn't originate with Salesforce, but like old B2B tech, like dating back to like Oracle, Sage, sort of that whole universe, right? And there was basically like, you are either an ISV, where you are an independent software vendor that is reselling our stuff in some capacity, or you are an SI, which is like you are a systems integrator. And I think that Aptitude 8 is probably the closest to an SI. And when we really think technical consulting firm, I think the thing that's interesting is we take that sort of same mentality that you do in an SI, which is like, what is the business process consulting? What is the ideal solution? What is the right platforms? How do we build that and make it work? But I think that like we have customers that don't integrate anything and they're just building on HubSpot platform. And we're doing, here's how we're going to build the data model. Here's how we're going to build the CRM infrastructure. Here's how we're going to build like CMS pages that read from objects and automatically generate content. And we're going to use custom coded actions and programmable emails. And we're trying to build on the platform. And so we're building something that is entirely unique to that business. We don't have any playbooks. I have no templates. I have no, oh, this is my standard installable package or my off the shelf onboarding. I have none of that. Like I have nothing that is templatized. And we then go and build that. And sometimes that's we're integrating other systems and other tools. And sometimes we're doing everything just fully on HubSpot and we're not connecting anything else. But it just depends on what the person's trying to solve and also the scale of business. I think that like it's a, I won't call it a pipe dream because it's a little bit too crass, but like I think very large organizations with legacy systems, legacy processes, and legacy tools are not going to flush everything and just move everything to HubSpot, even if they could. Like it's just like not a realistic thing to do. And so in those situations, you always end up integrating and connecting and combining with stuff that exists in the stack, even if it's for like a period of time, right? Even if it's like a wind down or a transition process, that stuff takes time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as an SI, now that I appropriately know your label or the closest thing to an SI, just curious on just helping our listeners understand what you're doing with their data. Because sometimes when we've used an integrator, an SI, you know, they've actually helped coach us or coach the client on, we're just the pass-through connector. We're not actually doing anything with your data. So when you think about just security, maybe even compliance, maybe just share a little bit about how not to do it or maybe how to do it in terms of, you know, just, I mean, yeah, I mean, when you're, I'd say more than most people, you probably have more access than most of the company's employees that work there.
We have a lot. We get access to a lot of data. We get access to a lot of things. So, I mean, we take it pretty seriously, right? So one is we have MDM deployed throughout the organization. So all laptops, all devices, we have remote monitor, remote access, remote control. So we can deactivate any computer, super important for different InfoSec teams where they're like, hey, if you theoretically you had a rogue employee and they had access to our stuff and they like wanted to destroy us, like how would you stop them? And unless you have those systems in place, you're just like, we tell them nicely not to. And so we can do sort of those things. We have password security, password management across the organization and audit logs for all of that. We use Rippling as an HRIS and I don't know what they call the rest of their, they have like a whole cybersecurity HRIS, like all the stuff. And so we use them for all of that. Everyone on our team completes InfoSec security certifications and the rest of it. And so, I mean, we work with publicly traded companies. We work with folks that are in education, have PII, folks that are in financial and some of those other segments. We don't do anything in HIPAA because we have some customers that do HIPAA stuff, but you can't store HIPAA data in HubSpot. We have a couple of workarounds we've built, but sort of those components. But I think you also end up needing an insurance policy. And I think honestly, more than anything, and one of the things that I would caution people that are in the, whether it's agency services, whether it's RevOps stuff, whether you're sort of in any of those arenas and you want to move into, let's do CRM projects for like larger scale companies, you really have to take it seriously. Like the risks are a lot higher. Like if you fail a CRM project and you take somebody from something that maybe wasn't modern, maybe wasn't efficient, but like was workable, and you build and deploy a system for them that doesn't work and their team can't use, like you are causing them extensive damages. Like, and not even like you expose yourself from a legal capacity 100%. But I think that more importantly than that, there's like the business ethics capacity of like, it's not like delivering a marketing retainer where, hey, we gave you a strategy, it didn't work, you spent some money on it, you didn't generate some leads. Like there's an opportunity cost there. But in this particular situation, like you're actually taking somebody from a running business machine to something that isn't working and something that now not only do you have the opportunity cost, you have like material damage and loss to their organization. And I candidly, like, I don't think, and I think we're all maturing. The HubSpot ecosystem is growing, like partners are getting a lot better. I don't know that everyone takes that as seriously as I think that it is. And I think that they kind of look at the CIO and the CFO and all of these people being in the room as they make these decisions as like annoying additional steps in the sales cycle. When like the reality is you're talking about performing open heart surgery on a patient that like has to be alive the whole time. Like, and if you kill them, like they're dead. and I think a lot of people are like, they take their dermatology practice and they're like, let's be heart surgeons. We can do it. It's all a body. And I think that there's a lot of risk in there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. We're just riffing now. This is great. Yeah, a couple kind of closing questions here. You know, just for that B2B executive that's as tuned in consistently or maybe for the first time on our Centricity podcast, what would you recommend as step one as we're vetting out custom, native? Do I need to integrate at all? And I would consider them a HubSpot user. Maybe they are already using HubSpot or maybe they're not using HubSpot. So I would just love, you know, for that listener that is that B2B executive, like what's kind of step one? What should I be looking for to, do I even need an integrated tech stack? You know, I think that's a good question to answer.
So I teach the RevOps bootcamp with HubSpot Academy, and I'll give you the exact same answer that I do there. It's just like, so you're new to RevOps stuff or you're new to looking at your system stuff and you're either a new employee or you're a person looking at this, like what do you do first? The number one thing I would suggest everyone and anyone start with is go make a map. And so we really like, there's Lucidchart, there's Miro, there's tons of systems and tools for this, but sit down and map out your core business process, how you do things, include the systems that get touched, include the different people and the actions that happen, and map the whole thing out. And like step one is we call it like current state mapping, and go through and do a full current state map of your organization and map all of this together. Once you do that current state map, what you want to do is then take that, go bring it to every one of those stakeholders, get their input and their feedback, make sure you have it right, and then start finding areas of friction. Find where things break down, find where information is missing, find out where there are parts that get disconnected or there's things that happen downstream because things are broken upstream, and start to kind of highlight and circle and like make labels on all of those different parts. And then you're really ready to be like, cool, now I have this. And either you want to, maybe you yourself are this person, maybe you hire somebody, maybe you have someone on your team, maybe you go look for a partner. This is the point at which I would go and do that. And you then work with people who have expertise who can help you translate what are those problems, what are those gaps, where are those pieces that are broken into what should that future state look like? And then you put together that future state map and then you translate that into sort of like a plan to make those changes and how that's actually going to function. And so we have a bunch of actual, like we have templates on our site for a bunch of this stuff. We have like a blueprint library of a bunch of maps that we've made, but that's the first thing to start with. And you don't need to be a technical expert to make that at all. It has no code, it has no APIs. Like you're just mapping out, here's how we do stuff and finding places where, oh, that's a bunch of manual work. Oh, that's redundant. Like, oh no, this is like we do this whole process and it goes nowhere. And you can map all of that out just by having some knowledge of sort of where the business is at today.
Thanks for that. That was awesome, man. Last question, formal question. What's one thing you've learned about sales or marketing, maybe systems, maybe data, that's just most greatly impacted you as a professional? If you just, what was just one thing you've learned, like, oh man, I've taken that with me with every venture, every side hustle, every spinoff business. What's just one thing you've learned along the way to share with the listeners today?
Specific to system stuff, integration stuff?
It can be non-system.
It could be whatever. I'll keep it narrow for the sake of the question. I think the number one thing that you could learn if you're going to create technical understanding is like learn about like a relational database and objects and data models. And your understanding of software and technology will just like instantly 10x once you understand sort of, oh, like there's tables and those tables have rows and those are records and like those can link to each other. And now the whole world just like starts to make a lot more sense as soon as you sort of understand that piece. And then the second one would be like APIs and what an API is. Like you can look at and understand API documentation without being a developer, without writing code, without doing anything by just being like, and if you only know those two things, like a whole side of the universe will look at you as like a wizard and a whole side of the universe will be like, oh God, another one of these guys who's not a real developer. But like That's like how you cross the line into like the second group. And a lot of those people that see you as wizards will perceive you as really high value as well.
I love it, man. Connor, thank you so much for coming on Centricity today. I've learned a ton about you. I think our listeners did too. And just the value that you provide, multiple industries that you serve, we're very appreciative to, yes, be connected with and introduce our listeners to another HubSpot partner, but then one that, yeah, lives by ethics, does really great, high quality work. And if they didn't see you at Inbound this year, they may see you next year.
Maybe next year we'll see. Yeah, Finding me is hard. It's just what I've learned, but I roll deep. So we'll have folks around.
Yeah. Well, for the listeners that are here today and that'll tune in at a later date, yeah, how can they keep up with you and the great work that you're doing? How can we stay connected?
Yeah. LinkedIn is the best channel. I put all my stuff there. It's Connor Jeffers on LinkedIn. You'll find me there. And then aptitude8.com. We have newsletters. We've got all sorts of stuff, but I'd say LinkedIn is probably the best place. I'm very reachable there. So give me a shout.
I love it. Well, hey, we appreciate you carving out some time today. And thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.